coming to PBS.
Oh, I'm thinking tonight of my goodbye.
Dolly Parton explains the appeal of country music.
You can dance to it. You can cry to it. You can make love to it. You can play it at a funeral. It has something in it for everybody, and people relate to it.
Dolly Parton, one of the artists in Ken Burns' country music. Premiering Sunday, September 15th at 8, 7 Central, only on PBS.
Wow, we ran a commercial. That is just a cut. How about that, Ken Burns? Look at that.
I'm hooked.
Yeah.
That was a great commercial.
The great Ken Burns, the great documentarian and humanitarian, is joining us right now. He's got a new series, as you just heard right there, that premiered last night on PBS, Channel 11 here. It's called Country Music, and I read a review over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It was the top trending story on Apple News.
Yeah.
That basically, I'm paraphrasing here, said that this series that you've created may be the tonic that America needs to come together, because this is not just a story of country music. Like all of your things are not, you know, it wasn't just a story of World War II. It wasn't just a story of the Civil War. It wasn't just a story of jazz or baseball or any of the other great things that you've done. These have always been the stories of America,
mm-hmm.
and what all of those institutions meant as they wove part of the pattern here that is the American, whatever happens to be, the psyche, the great tapestry of America. And this is absolutely right down that line, because you tell amazing stories, but you also you combine why it is that we are more aligned and together than we are apart, and it always comes through in the arts.
Oh, thank you. That's a very nice way. I've spent my entire life telling stories about the U.S., and I've also told stories about the lowercase two-letter personal pronoun that's also U.S., us. So all of the intimacy and warmth of us, and also we and our, plus all of the majesty, the breadth, the complexity, the contradiction, and even the controversy of the U.S. And what I've learned, and I think this project drove it home more than anything else, is that there's only us. There's no them. Everything about our binary computer media world suggests that everything has to be in opposition. I don't think that's necessarily the case. And art is one of those transcendent things. In this film, the jazz great Wynton Marsalis says that we all have an ethnic heritage, but we have a human heritage that's much more important. And art tells the tale of us coming together. The story of country music is not the story of one genre, a one thing. It's about a many thing. As in everything in the United States, we're a mixture. We're an alloy. And whenever anyone tries to convince us that we can be more American if we only pull out this one thing that is, purely American, they've already weakened that alloy. If you take iron out of steel, nothing has the strength of steel. And I think that's the point that country music makes. It certainly comes from, it's in essentially a white community. It's had very few African-American stars, but its origins are steeped in the African-American experience. Many of the mentors of the early greats of country music were African-American. We are a mixture, and so is jazz, and so is the blues, and so is R&B, and so is pop, and so is folk and rock and rap and classical, all the things that country music touches and is influenced by. I'll give you an idea that this runs two ways. Ray Charles was given a chance to have creative control of an album for the very first time in his career in 1962. And he surprised everyone, particularly folks in his camp, when he came out with Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music. And the number one single of the summer of 1962 was I Can't Stop Loving You by Don Gibson, a country song. And if you listen to it, it's a country song. And Ray said, you take white music and you take black music, and it's the same GD thing every time.
It's amazing. You know, you think about it, the relatable stories of country music, that's what ultimately brought me the way of loving country music. I mean, I grew up in Chicago in the neighborhoods, and I always looked at it as more of a rural thing. My mom, who's from a rural place, she liked Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson. She loved Dolly Parton, all those people. But I didn't relate to that music growing up in the city. But and I did look at that rural-urban divide and even that black-white divide and say, well, that's kind of who that's for. But over time, it feels as if, for me personally, it's become, I just love country music, but I think generally it's the divide has become more blurred, would you say, over time? It just seems like more so than ever.
That's a very interesting question. The songwriter Harlan Howard called country music three chords and the truth. He's acknowledging that it doesn't have the complexity of classical or some forms of jazz, but it does deliver the truth. It's speaking about universal experiences that everyone goes through. And there are two four-letter words that most of us would rather not deal with, love and loss. And so we often disguise country music as that rural southern thing, you know, pickup trucks and good old boys and hound dogs and six packs of beer. But it's really more Hank Williams. The silence of a falling star lights up a purple sky. And as I wonder where you are, I'm so lonesome I could cry. There's nobody within the sound of my ears, of my voice that doesn't know exactly what Hank Williams is talking about. And the other thing is, it's so interesting, this is what our first episode was last night, called The Rub, is that in the early days of radio, the original, and not the original, but one of the biggest barn dance shows was on WLS, World's Largest Store in Chicago. And that was the center of country music, or hillbilly music as it was then called, back in the late 20s and early 30s. And it was only the centrality of Nashville for guys to be able to tour around that their barn dance, which eventually got called the Grand Ole Opry, took supremacy. So this may be a story that was born in rural areas, but my goodness, it grew up and grew up pretty quick in big cities like Chicago and Nashville and Fort Worth and Charlotte and Bakersfield and many, many other places.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that plays a really nice role. And WGN for a while had that barn dance. Actually, it's really interesting because it had moved, you know, from LS to GN just as much as I have. And then eventually moved back. But it was radio. You do a really nice, as you do with all of these, you do a really nice job of telling the story from the early part of the 20th century using, some really rough, whether it's film stock or record stock or whatever audio that you can find, recordings, to tell this story. And I think my favorite thing here is that as soon as the idea of the hillbilly, and there's an, if you watch, you'll be able to see all of these, you know, in rotation, and you can download, you can stream them
and
on PBS.
And stream them,
So the thing that I think is fascinating is some of these guys faked that they were hillbillies. There
really?
Were a number of these guys
really?
That were, there was one guy who was a doctor in Nashville. There was another guy, there were other really sophisticated people who, there was a guy who was a factory worker, right? Who decided, I'm just going to be a hillbilly because I like the music and I can do this, but that's not where they came from.
That's right. Well, so there's an early thing. I mean, we have the three chords and the truth, and Rodney Crowell has to come on and say, we put him on right afterwards, says truth-telling even when it's a big fat lie. Yeah, so when they started WSM, we shield millions from the National Life and Accident Insurance Company in Nashville that eventually came the Grand Ole Opry. You're absolutely right. Very well-to-do and very respected doctor at Vanderbilt, became the fruit jar drinkers or something like that. And a lot of people would black out their teeth and affect this kind of down-home thing. And the original guy, Fiddlin' John Carson, was a factory worker who worked for decades in Atlanta, but he'd come from the hill country and he knew these songs, and so he started playing them and turned himself into a kind of hick image of what it was. And that goes both ways. It bites as well as it sings.
All right, I want to and then round this out. There's this wasn't until last night. It's coming up, I think, tonight or tomorrow night. What's the total number of episodes in this?
Eight, 8 episodes. We do 4 this week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then 4 next week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay, so this is coming up. But Merle Haggard tells a story about Okie from Muskogee. And this is, I think, a really important, because this gets to this issue of the sort of the grander cultural argument that's being made here about America and where we are in 2019 in America. We see ourselves as very divided, as you pointed out, whether it's through the media, through politics or whatever. The people who are sending information to us are sending information that tells us we need to divide ourselves. Even though when we look around, we still see the same people that are our neighbors and friends and coworkers and all that. And we're not necessarily divided from them, but we have to be divided by somebody else. You know, sometimes it's your relatives. When you see them only once a year at Thanksgiving, you're going to fight about, you know, all those other things. But Okie from Muskogee, I think, makes this point, which was that Merle Haggard basically apologized, right, for writing that song. Tell that story.
Well, you know, it's a very complicated story. It was a kind of a spoof song. They were driving by Muskogee on the bus, and somebody said, "I bet you they don't smoke marijuana there." Everybody on Merle Haggard's bus, including Merle Haggard, smoked marijuana. So they write this song. It's kind of a novelty song. It's what's called wonderful, proud tradition in country music called hokum. And they write this song, and it gets adopted by the counterculture, that is to say, the people who are opposed to the people who are protesting the war in Vietnam, and then it kind of gets hijacked. But at the end, Merle said, it's really about identity. His father had been an Okie. He had emigrated during the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression to the Central Valley of California. He was looked down upon, and Merle said it must have been something like what the blacks experienced. And his whole story, I swear to God, Hollywood's going to make a movie about it. It's too good not to tell this whole story. But in any case, Merle began to realize after he had been co-opted by Okie from Muskogee and actually drawn into making several other films that might be considered politicizing what had been this distinguished career as the poet of the common man, I think he went back and realized that what he was really trying to say is that it's important to be whoever you are. And that's a kind of liberating thing that allows him to escape the specific gravity of the, how shall we put it, the misuse of Okie from Muskogee. I remember being a hippie in Ann Arbor, and we just loved it. It was so meta. It was so kitsch. We just thought it was great, you know, the song. And when I finally dove into working on this project for 8.5 years, you begin to realize, and we were so fortunate enough to get Merle an interview before he passed away. He's like Zeus in our film. Every time he opens his mouth, he is saying something, and he's very important early on, telling us about Jimmy Rogers, telling us about Ernest Tubb, telling us about various people. But when it catches up to his story and you realize how central he is, Emmylou Harris says in our film, you want to know what country music is? Get a Merle Haggard record. Any record, it doesn't matter. Put it on a cut, any cut, it doesn't matter, and begin right there. You've got the beginning of your tutorial in country music, and the songs he left us, The Bottle Let Me Down, Mama Tried, Mama's Hungry Eyes, Holding Things Together, Today I Started Loving You Again. These are unbelievable films that earn him a right to be up on Mount Rushmore with Jimmy Rogers and Hank Williams and Bill Monroe and Johnny Cash and Mother Maybelle Carter and Loretta Lynn and Dolly Parton. This is a story where most every other musical form in America is a fraternity. Knock, knock, can't get in. Maybe we'll let Ella Fitzgerald or Billie Holiday or Sarah Vaughan get in. But this has had strong women from the very, very beginning. The original American lead guitarist is Mother Maybelle Carter. And when you learn guitar, you learn the Carter scratch, and you learn it from Wildwood Flower. And everything issues from her.
It's an amazing story. And that's a story in and of itself, too. These people, they went out, they made their first $5,000. I mean, imagine what that was. Or no, $300, which would have been $5,000 or whatever. And they went back and they bought a farm. That's what they did. And it's a really special work. If you love Maybe you don't even love country music. If you love country music, you're going to love this.
I knew the fans would love it, but I made it for the people who say, well, I don't really know about country music.
Watch this.
Those who came right up to me and said, I don't like it. I had one guy, a friend of mine, he said, Ken, I've loved everything you do, but country music, he kind of shook his head as if I had been out and stepped in a cow paddock, you know, like I had made some big career move. After he looked at all 8 episodes, he was in a puddle. He was sobbing. He spent the last year and a half apologizing to me, and he calls me almost every week, say, oh, today I downloaded all of Jimmy Rogers, or I'm learning about the Lubin Brothers, or some, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Stuff. I said,
that is so cool.
Really great. Well, it's really, really great. And you know, the thing is, it's about story. That's the whole thing. When you learn why Dolly wrote I Will Always Love You, the Declaration of Independence,
breaks your heart.
Take her version well above Whitney Houston's. Remember, that's the big crossover pop hit that raises the hair on the back of your neck.
Yeah.
And I'm not taking anything away from Whitney's version of it, but when you hear the story of Dolly writing it, then Dolly's version, Dolly is one of the great people of all time, hers goes way above that. It's so spectacular, and I like that thing that story does.
Ken, thank you so much. It's always a great pleasure to talk to you. People got to see this. You got to also see Merle Haggard, how great he looks in this. All the people look great in it, but it's just a special, special thing. So, again, congratulations. I hope you're in town soon. We'll see you then.
Thank you, my friend. See you soon, I hope.
There he goes.
Thanks,
Ken Burns. Watch this. Country music on PBS this week and next week. Right now, Ken is not here. Kim is here with the WGN News at 7 of the hour. What's going on?
One streaming service is about to become the master of the Seinfeld domain. We'll explain coming up.